Chapter 8. The Emperor remembered this place as the Labyrinth, a name from ancient Terran legend that only had vague meaning for the Primarch. Korax knew that it did not matter which of the corridors they followed initially. Each led into a randomly shifting network of passages and bridges that responded to the presence of intruders, directing them away from the inner vault. There were also numerous automated defences, both in pre-planned kill zones and wandering the maze. It was a cunning artifice, allowing no strategy because there was no logic to outthink. Korax remembered that the shutting and opening of doors, the shifting of movable gantries, and the spinning of enormous turntables was directed by the random melting of a glacier on the other side of the mountain, impossibly intricate to predict, even for his superhuman mind. He could have the entirety of his old legion and not be able to find a route through by trial and error. At first he had been dismayed by the thought of getting trapped in the labyrinth, but the more he had considered the problem, the more Korax had convinced himself that the Emperor had implanted some clue or stratagem that would outfox the random nature of the situation. If not, he had been sent on a fool's errand, and that seemed equally as impossible as the task at hand. There had to be a way. And so the Primarch racked every memory he could pull from his thoughts, seeking some tiniest nugget of truth that would provide a solution. The labyrinth had been activated after the Emperor's final visit, and so the Master of Mankind had never traversed its depths. There was nothing to be learnt from first-hand experience. A flash of inspiration had come to Korax. The Emperor had overseen the construction of the labyrinth, and in that there was a pattern. As ingenious as its operation was, the labyrinth was not infinite. There were only so many possible configurations it could align itself to at any given time. Slowly, an image formed in the Primarch's thoughts of passages being delved and bridges erected. He saw the great engines being sunk into the rock that would power the labyrinth, the power channels that linked those engines to the sensor beneath the glacier, the pneumatics and gears that drove the whole machine. Just like the mosaic behind the door, there was a formula to be discovered, a single equation that could sum up the immense operation of the labyrinth. Korax could not compose such an equation in his head, it was too vast, but from what he could now remember of the construction, it was possible to make a start. As the workings of the labyrinth unraveled in front of his mind's eye, Korax saw a weakness. It was possible to present the labyrinth itself with a dilemma it could not solve, requiring it to respond in contradictory ways that could not be physically accomplished. The labyrinth could be tricked into jamming itself open.
"I need 3 exploration teams," he told Arcatus and Agapito, speaking quickly. "Take the 6th, 18th and 13th corridors."
"Is it wise to split our force, Lord?" asked Agapito. "You warned us of defence systems."
"We must split our force, Commander. The squads must be on full alert."
Other memories were becoming fixed in Korax's mind.
"They will encounter mobile sentry devices as well as fixed gunnery emplacements. They employ laser weaponry and solid shot cannons, easily powerful enough to penetrate Legione's Astartes armor. These devices use broad spectral analysis, heat and vibration detectors, and proximity trips. Blind grenades and plasma discharges will render them inoperational for short periods. Tell the legionaries to look for sensor plates. They are likely to be mounted on the weapons themselves, as well as at points on the walls. Do not forget to check the ceilings and floors."
"Destroy the sensors, and the guns will be blind," said Arcatus.
"Best to destroy the guns as well," said Korax. "There may be redundancies and cross-weapon networks in the defense grid. Warn your warriors that the battlescape will be changing constantly. The area they are about to enter is highly active, capable of transitioning from one format to another. They will come across meeting points between the elements of the maze, likely doorways and bridges. Crossing the threshold of these points will activate a transformation of the layout. Our warriors must also be prepared for environmental and gravitic changes."
"Gravitic changes?" said Arcatus. "What sort of place is this?"
"Some of the tunnels can invert, and there are chambers set with gravity devices counter to the standard field," continued Korax. "Also, beware of thermal and atmosphere changes. The maze is hazardous, but it contains nothing that our troops cannot surmount."
"This sounds like a nightmare," said Agapito.
How are we supposed to get any kind of force through that? And what about those who get left behind? I know how the maze will react, and every action will be guided by me. All movements and contacts are to be reported directly to me across the command channel. All orders from me must be acted upon without delay. Arcatus, you must be my spearhead.
I am under orders not to leave your side, replied the custodian.
I must remain here to coordinate the mission, Korax told the gold-armored warrior. I need your group. There are not enough Raven Guard to unlock the labyrinth. I need your warriors, custodian, and their complete obedience.
My orders were specific, said Arcatus, shaking his head. Who can say what will happen to us in that maze?
You must trust me, Arcatus, said Korax.
The Legio Custodes cannot afford the luxury of trust, came the reply.
The Primarch searched for an alternative, eyes settling on the cyborg creations of the Mechanicum. He dismissed them. The servitors were too slow to respond to orders and would be more of a liability than an asset during this part of the operation. Korax turned back to Arcatus.
I am asking for your help, custodian, said the Primarch. Your orders may be to watch me, but your role is to protect the Emperor. With the secrets held beyond the labyrinth, I can forge a new Raven Guard Legion. That legion will fight against Horus. If the custodians wish to have such allies, you must aid me now.
Arcatus remained silent for a while, the mask of his helm hiding any thoughts and expressions.
"Do you require all of my men?" he asked.
"Preferably," said Korax, making quick calculations. 15 may be sufficient."
It was some time again before Arcatus spoke next.
"Very well," he said. "We will all venture into this labyrinth. What do you require of us?"
"Thank you, Arcatus. Adjust your communications to the Raven Guard frequencies. Commander Agapito will furnish you with the details. Please divide your custodians equally between the three expeditions. Agapito, you will lead Team 1. Arcatus, I will give you command of Team 2. Senior Sergeant in the Force is Nestil, correct?
Yes, Lord. Nestil has seniority, replied Agapito.
He shall be commander of the third team. Teams are to advance in combat squads, 5 men each, with 10-meter dispersal in each squad and a 20-meter gap between squads. Is that understood?
Yes, Lord, said Agapito. I shall start the briefing.
This seems too dangerous work for uncertain reward, said Arcatus. I hope it is worth it.
Considering Arcatus's words, the Primarch took a moment to evaluate his course of action. From the moment the Raven Guard entered the labyrinth, Korax and his warriors would be committed. The deadly series of traps and defences would be set in motion, and there would be no chance of withdrawal. They would either reach the vault or die in the attempt. The leader of the Raven Guard was sure that the gene tech held the key to resisting Horus, no matter the sacrifice required to acquire it.
It will be worth it, custodian, replied Korax. The Emperor would not go to all of this effort to protect something of no value. This gene tech contains the secrets of our creation, and with those secrets the forces of the Emperor will multiply 100-fold. When the Raven Guard strike back at Horus, you will be thankful of the choice you have made.
If we survive that long, said Arcatus.
That will depend on your discipline and swift reactions, said Korax, and I am in no doubt the custodians have both in ample supply.
With a nod, Arcatus returned to his men. The large hall rang with a thunder of boots as the custodians and Raven Guard moved to their designated positions. Korax blocked out the chatter over the vox. He closed his eyes, creating a picture of the labyrinth in his mind. No one had set foot within its walls since its completion, and so the Primarch knew the starting layout from the schematics gifted to him by the Emperor. The Emperor had designed the maze to outwit any foe, but had given Korax just enough insight to tip the balance. It was up to the Primarch now to make the correct decisions. Korax had learned to pick locks from older Geb back on Lycaeus, but he was about to pick the most complicated lock in all of the Imperium, devised by the Emperor himself. He took a deep breath, focusing on the first 50 meters of the labyrinth. He would know within that distance whether he could crack the secret of the maze. If not, Korax chided himself for the moment of doubt. There would be no failure. He could not allow it.
He had not said as much to Agapito, but in his calculations he had allowed for a 10% attrition rate. If that proved to be true, those custodians and Raven Guard who gave their lives to the labyrinth could not be allowed to die in vain. He let out the breath. It was time to start. The drone of the air barges, powering through Kiavar's polluted skies, thrummed constantly through the cracked tiles on the roof, the vibration sending a tiny but constant stream of dust across the glimmer of light that crept through a crack between the ill-fitting metal plates of the wall. The worker's shack was dark, except for that single glimmer, which created a dim pool of light in the centre of the hut and touched upon half-seen machines and tools piled along the walls. The air was thick with the smell of rust, moisture seeping through a small culvert beneath a broken sink on the wall opposite the door. Omegon heard footsteps on the metal gantry outside. He stayed immobile, hidden by the shadows, his bolter held ready. The plate of the door creaked open, shedding flakes of oxidized iron into the light that trickled through the opening. The doorway was lit from behind by a glow of a strobing searchlight flickering through a red haze of rust-polluted air. A man with a loose tunic and baggy trousers appeared in silhouette. He darted a glance over his shoulder before stepping inside and closed the door behind him, blocking out the glow of the air barge navigation lights.
"Councillor Ifrit?" he asked, stepping into the thin shaft of light.
His pupils were wide, ineffectively trying to pierce the gloom. Omegon could see that his clothes were well tailored, fashioned in the style favored by the guilds before the coming of the Mechanicum. Layers of ornate cloth obscured the man's figure, but from his pinched face and vein-heavy hands, Omegon could see that he was frail, his skin worn thin from decades of anti-agapics. His voice shared a reedy quality with his body.
"It is Armand Eloqui."
"I can see who you are," said Omegon. The voice modulator trembled at his throat, adding two octaves to the pitch of his words.
"Welcome."
"I cannot see you," said Eloqui.
"That is for the best for the moment," Omegon told him. "There is a seat to your left. Make yourself comfortable."
"It is a risk, meeting like this."
Eloqui's eyes continued to dart nervously from side to side, unable to locate Omegon. He did not sit down.
"You are not followed," said Omegon. "You will be returned to the guild hall by the same means you arrived, with no suspicions aroused."
"Still, it seems to be an awful risk for no reason."
"Please, sit down, Guildmaster," said Omegon. "We have a little while longer to wait."
"Wait?"
There was an edge of panic in Eloqui's voice. Omegon smiled in the darkness. It was good that the Guildmaster and his allies were on edge. In truth, there was no cause for them to be suspicious. The Mechanicum were totally unaware of any plot in their midst, but it suited Omegon's need for secrecy for his pawns to be ever vigilant. Their nervousness also made their negotiating position weaker.
"Sit down."
Omegon did not bark or snarl the words, but he added just a little of the authority he could muster. Authority that had sent warriors into battle without fear and equally dispatched operatives to their necessary deaths. Eloqui hesitated on the rickety remnants of an old armchair, the fabric worn thin by generations of foremen who had slunk off their shifts to this hidey-hole to enjoy a moment's peace from the docking yard below. It had not been used in years, not since the coming of the Mechanicum.
"Your fortunes have failed of late," Omegon said quietly, his words delivered in a sympathetic tone. "Once you and your guild claimed rulership of Kiavar. Now you are reduced to underlings of the Mechanicum. A whole continent used to labour for your benefit, Guildmaster, and the populace of an entire moon worked to death to bring ore and aggregate to the guild's workings. You grew powerful, and your lives were filled with luxury. Do you miss that time, Guildmaster?"
"Of course," the old man snapped. "The dogs of Mars have swept away everything with their stupid hierarchies and cults. Not a die stamps, nor a bolt is tightened without their artificial eyes watching, their mechanical brains counting. Scraps from their table, that's what we must survive on now. They have not the courage to do away with us entirely. Instead, they inflict this wasting disease upon the guilds, bleeding us dry so that we will eventually wither and die, leaving them with the riches of Kiavar."
And you want to take that power back? Omegon prompted. That is understandable. Why should you slay for the distant, uncaring Emperor or the Magi of Mars when your halls stand empty, your tables sparse, and your treasuries looted?
Exactly, said Eloqui. Exactly my point, Counselor. We were cowed, broken by the threat of annihilation. But the Mechanicum made a mistake in letting us live. We will take back Kiavar. It took 100 generations to build this world, and if it takes 100 more to reclaim it, we will.
Your freedom is so much closer than that, said Omegon. Within the year, I predict, the guilds will control Kiavar again. You have a powerful ally whom I represent. The War Master himself, Horus Lupercal, saviour of the Imperium, stands ready to support you.
Horus?
There was awe in the Guildmaster's voice. It turned to suspicion.
What interest does Horus have in humble Kiavar?
You will soon hear many disturbing tales about the War Master, said Omegon, ignoring the question. There will be lies spread by agents of the Emperor to sow discord among those who doubt the rightful rule of Terra. You must see through the deceit and stay true to your ideals. Horus looks to those who have suffered the tyranny of the Emperor to stand up for the cause of justice. Across the galaxy there are hundreds of worlds like yours, denied their freedom, denied the right to rule themselves because of some misguided notion of compliance. Horus will give you back your freedom, and in return he expects nothing more than the support of Kiavar, should he ask for it.
Wait, this sounds a lot more dangerous than it did a moment ago, said Eloqui, standing up. I am not sure I like where this is heading. Why have you only just mentioned Horus's interest? What does he care for the fate of Kiavar?
Relax, Armand, Omegon said in his most conciliatory tone. We are allies, but we must be cautious. The Emperor and the Mechanicum will do everything they can to cling on to their power. You must understand that I had to assure myself of your dedication to freedom. Throwing off the shackles of the Mechanicum will not be easy, but you must understand that you must also face down the warriors of the Raven Guard.
We cannot afford a war against the Legiones Astartes, said Eloqui. You mentioned nothing of overt action, Counselor. Do you think we're fools? Our aim is to gradually usurp power, not to openly wrest it from those who deny us the right to rule ourselves. I do not like the way in which you have changed the stakes.
No trickery is intended, said Omegon, lying through his teeth, and enjoying the manipulation of this weak-willed, ambitious man. He had said much the same thing to the other guildmasters, making each feel indispensable to the cause, massaging their precious egos. It is because I can trust you that I reveal this information. You alone are privy to this knowledge, and I know you will guard it with your life. The Raven Guard will pose little threat to the true rulers of Kiavar. I can tell you now that they have suffered a massive reversal. I am sure you will learn the same from other sources soon. This much was true. By some means, news of Horus's actions would spread, and it would come to Kiavar that half of the Legiones Astartes had turned on the Emperor. It was better that Horus's version of events was heard first, casting doubt on the rumours and propaganda that would be following. Part of the bargain agreed with the War Master was for the Alpha Legion to spread disinformation ahead of this, whilst seeking new forces for Horus's cause. It was a mission Alpharius and Omegon were well prepared to undertake. On many other worlds, Alpha Legion operatives and legionaries were already sowing discord amongst the Emperor's followers and stoking thoughts of rebellion in those who had been forced into compliance by the Legiones Astartes.
I have heard whispers that deliverance is all but empty, guarded by a handful of ships and no more, said the Guildmaster.
They attempted to defy the War Master, and now the Legion has been all but destroyed. With your help, we will finish their destruction and restore the rule of Kiavar to those who deserve it.
I do not understand this, said Eloqui. The Raven Guard attacked the sons of Horus?
Indeed. Just so. The Emperor, jealous of Horus's power and popularity, sought to withdraw the rights he had granted his War Master and sent several legions to force Horus to surrender. Horus is not without many friends, though, and the lackeys of the Emperor were destroyed. The Raven Guard escaped by a twist of fate. But they are spent. Now is the time to strike. Unless, of course, you do not support Horus in his fight for liberty.
Omegon left the consequences of such a view unsaid, but he could hear Eloqui's heart beat a little faster as he filled in the blanks left by the Primarch. A vague reference to punishment was worth a dozen specific threats in the minds of the weak. Whatever the Guildmaster imagined would happen to him was far more worrying and personal than anything Omegon could devise.
The Warmaster will respect the power of the guilds. He will allow us to reinstate the old laws.
Omegon could hear the calculation in Eloqui's tone, the greed and desire to rule. The Primarch knew what the Guildmaster wanted to really hear, but was too afraid to voice.
Deliverance will be overthrown and the colony of Lycaeus returned to the guilds, said Omegon. Horus will give you autonomy from Terra and Mars. He does not even demand your fealty, only your friendship. He asked for you by name, Guildmaster.
My name? Known to the Warmaster?
A slight wheezing outside the shack came to Omegon, almost unheard amongst the clatter of a passing freight car.
My other guest will be arriving in moments, he told Eloqui.
The Guildmaster was nervous enough without having another arrive without some kind of warning.
Do not be alarmed.
The door opened a few seconds later. A robed figure entered, swathed in folds of black and red. A gold mask glinted beneath a heavy cowl, cables and pipes protruding from the faceplate, linked to an ornate brass machine on the newcomer's chest.
What is this?
Hissed Eloqui, backing away from the new arrival. Omegon silently sidestepped into the other corner to avoid the Guildmaster stumbling into him.
You have betrayed us.
I said not to be alarmed, said Omegon. Do not judge by appearances.
I am Magos Unithrax, Guildmaster, said the newcomer, his voice ringing from behind the mask. I am here to help you overthrow the tyranny of Mars.
You are one of them, one of the Mechanicum.
Yes and no, Unithrax said calmly. I come from the Order of the Dragon and answer to a different power from Terra. With the aid of my associates, I will see the guilds restored to power on Kiavar.
Eloqui was speechless, his terror still gripping him.
Unithrax will ensure the grip of the Mechanicum is broken from within,
Omegon explained, speaking slowly to ensure the Guildmaster heard him.
With the Magi in disarray, the guilds will be able to overthrow the usurpers. You need his help, Armand. Believe me, you need his help.
What if I chose not to ally myself with this thing, said Eloqui. Maybe we do not want any more of your conspiracy.
It is too late, said Unithrax. Already wheels are in motion. You can either be elevated to power or be crushed by the forces we will unleash. The guilds will control Kiavar and Lycaeus again. Whether you choose to number yourself amongst those guildmasters or not is irrelevant to our plans.
Seeing that he had no choice, Eloqui nodded firmly, affecting an air of bravado.
Well, it seems that I was right to trust you, Counselor, he said. I knew there was more to you than a simple alliance of the guilds. The Warmaster can expect my full support.
Good. I am glad that we are in agreement, Armon, said Omegon,
suppressing a laugh at the hollow arrogance of the man. He could imagine the Guildmaster's ambitions growing, seeing himself in audience with Horus, perhaps a master of a dozen worlds or more. It was pitiful, really.
It would be wise of you to leave now. You will be contacted again in due course.
Yes, very well,
said Eloqui, circling around Unithrax to reach the door.
One other thing, Guildmaster,
said the Magos as Eloqui was about to leave.
Yes?
Unithrax held out a hand, sheathed in a silvery gauntlet.
I am pleased to make your acquaintance, said the Magos.
Eloqui grunted and took the prophet hand in his grip. A moment later he squealed and ripped away his hand as if stung.
"A guarantee of your cooperation, Guildmaster," said Unithrax, holding up a fingertip that glinted with a needlepoint in the low light.
"What have you done?"
demanded Eloqui, looking at his wrist.
"A neurotoxin, Guildmaster. It is inactive at the moment, of no threat. However, should you disclose my presence or betray our cause in any way, you can be assured that the catalyzing agent will be introduced into your system. Air, food, water, all can be used."
Aghast, Eloqui stared at the puncture mark on his wrist and then glared at the Magos before stumbling from the cabin.
"Was that really necessary?"
Omegon asked, cautioning himself not to get too close to the renegade Magos. It was possible that the Order of the Dragon had a poison that would work on Primarchs, too.
"You can be so unsubtle at times." "Let us hope it is a needless precaution, but it is not without benefit," replied Unithrax. "When the Order of the Dragon takes control, the guilds will be of no further use. Better to lay the groundwork now and ease their disposal later. Before I leave, I have messages for you from the Fabricator General concerning developments on Mars."
"I am sure you do," said Omegon.
"I am sure you do."
The walls of the passageway were lined with large panels of a dark grey material. Alpharius ran a hand over it, the sensors of his gauntlets conveying its smooth texture to his fingertips. Tiny temperature detectors told him it was cold to the touch. Slamming his fist into one of the panels, Alpharius noted hairline cracks appearing, radiating out from the impact.
"Ceramite," he said. "Like our armor."
"Don't touch anything," snapped Sergeant Dor. "Not without the Primarch say so. If something shoots at you, shoot back, but don't do anything else without orders."
"Yes, Sergeant,"
said Alpharius, regretting his action immediately. Curiosity was not a trait that would be rewarded in his current situation. He stepped back into the group of legionaries, realizing he had drawn attention to himself. Dor and his squad were the lead element, split into 2 5-man groups. Alongside Dor were Alpharius, Lucar, Velps, and Marco, with a multi-melter. They had covered perhaps 70 meters of a passageway, which was lit by strips inserted into the angle between ceiling and walls, bathing the legionaries in an unwavering yellow glow.
"Look at that,"
said Luca, pointing to one of the ceramite slabs ahead.
"Switch to thermal."
Alpharius did so, a film of red falling over his vision as his armor's autosenses tracked through the frequencies to the infrared end of the spectrum. Behind the panel Luca had pointed at, he could see a tracery of brighter lines.
"Power cables," said Alpharius.
"Sergeant?"
"I see it," replied Dor, holding up his hand to signal the halt. "Commander, we have some kind of power conduit ahead."
"Understood."
Agapito's reply was immediate, his voice tense.
"Await orders."
"Proceed 30 meters, Sergeant Dor."
The Primarch's deep voice cut across the vox.
"You will see a sealed door ahead of you. Wait by the door for further instructions."
"Affirmative, Lord,"
replied Dor, waving his hand to set the squad moving again.
"Keep an eye out for weapon systems."
They had advanced only another 5 meters when a panel in the ceiling hinged open and a multi-barreled gun dropped into view. Lucar was the first to react, unleashing a salvo from his bolter into the opening, the explosive shells tearing through a nest of cables. Sparks showered down and the weapon wilted on its mechanical arm, twitching fitfully.
"If that's the worst this place has to offer, this shouldn't be too hard," said Luca.
As if in response to his bravado, there was a shout of alarm from behind the squad, followed immediately by the crack of a laser bolt.
"Eyes front," snapped Dor. "Not our problem. Keep advancing."
The chatter of bolter fire and the distinctive crackle of a plasma gun echoed along the passageway as the squad continued on. As Korax had told them, they came upon a chamber a few meters wider than the corridor, bare except for a door in the opposite wall. The portal was slightly recessed into the ceramite, made of the same material. Alpharius could see no sign of a handle or lock, though his thermal vision showed several power cables leading into the sill around the door.
we just wait here?
Asked Phelps. He pulled a melter bomb from his belt and held it up.
This'll burn through that door in no time.
Don't you do anything, said
Dor, warning Phelps back with a raised hand as the legionary took a step across the room. Alpharius looked around the square chamber. Other than its dimensions, there was nothing to mark it out from the passageway that had led to it. The featurelessness of the corridor, the perfect uniformity of it, unsettled him. He was an Alpha Legionnaire, and intimately knew the disorientating power of anonymity. It would be very easy to get lost in such a place, and Alpharius had no intention of ending his life in this bland but deadly warren of passages and rooms.
Perhaps we should mark our progress somehow, in case we get turned around, he suggested. What do you mean?
Asked Dor. Alpharius drew out his combat blade and etched a cross into the ceramite wall to his left.
If we see that again, we know we've come in a circle, he said.
They waited for several minutes. Alpharius looked back down the corridor and saw the other half of the squad a dozen meters behind, still in the corridor. The heat from the power packs of the following legionaries was building up, distorting the air with a haze. To Alpharius's thermal vision, the vents on the backpacks of the other legionaries were bright white.
Commander, we are giving off a high heat signature, said Alpharius. The Primarch said that the defense systems had thermal registers.
Good point, replied Agapito. All squads set cooling systems to minimum. Reduce heat signatures.
Negative. Do not adjust heat signatures.
Korax's tone was quiet but terse. Alpharius realized the Primarch had to be monitoring every squad communication, a considerable mental feat.
I need you to trigger the thermal sensors if necessary. Team 2 will shortly be in position. Their progress will trigger the first transformation. The door ahead of you will open in 2 minutes. Stand ready.
In the entry chamber, Korax had his eyes closed, the totality of his mind focused on picturing the mechanism of the labyrinth and the positions of his squads. He had blocked out all input save for the constant narration that streamed across the command network into the communications bead in his ear. Like a burglar examining the most complicated lock ever devised, the Primarch imagined the interplay of revolving rooms, rising bridges, closing doorways, and collapsing arches. The three forces had already begun to divide, combat squads directed through new openings to trigger the next transformation of the maze. With each random change, Korax's plan evolved and solidified, as possible avenues of approach opened or were shut. He could not predict every movement of the labyrinth, but he could respond swiftly to each development. The timing of each move had to be precise, and he snapped out orders in a clipped voice, redirecting the combat squads to where they were needed. He blotted out the sound of gunfire and the rumble of mighty engines and immense pistons. He ignored the curses and warnings of his warriors. His sole purpose was the unpicking of the lock. 23 minutes and 117 meters after first entering the labyrinth, the Raven Guard suffered a casualty. A legionary under Agapito's command was struck in the chest by a laser bolt from an automated turret that had risen from the floor.
We have no apothecary, the sergeant reported. Mathan looks in a bad way.
You must leave him behind, Sergeant Cannor, Korax replied quickly. We will return for him later. Move the rest of the squad up to the second archway on your left. The doorway ahead of you will be closing in 7 seconds.
Mathan is still alive, barely. He needs treatment.
You have your orders, Korax said coldly.
The gene tech, the rebirth of the Raven Guard, was a prize greater than any individual life. There could be no delays. The labyrinth would already be moving towards its next configuration. To falter would be to fail, and that would make every life lost a vain sacrifice.
Move your squad now.
Confirmed, Lord Korax.
Distracted by the event, the Primarch had almost missed an opportunity to get Agapito's lead squad across a bridge that might ascend into the heights when Arcatus's men entered the chamber ahead of them. Korax made a swift calculation and judged there still to be time enough for the crossing. The ramp ahead seemed innocuous enough to Arhold Dane, special weapons bearer of Squad 7, though Lord Korax had warned the squad to approach with caution. The ferrocrete causeway rose 10 meters above the floor of the chamber, leading to a circular door that looked like a ship's airlock. Dane looked up and saw a similar opening directly above,
and what appeared to be the rungs of a ladder leading from one of the walls across the ceiling.
"How would anybody get up there?"
he asked, adjusting his grip on his flamer as the 5-man combat squad advanced towards the causeway.
"I've no idea," replied Sergeant Caban. "Stay focused."
With a loud hiss, the double doors through which the squad had entered slid shut behind them. Dane detected vibrations pulsing through the floor at the same time as a distinctive crackling came to his ears.
"Wait!"
the legionary snapped, stopping in mid-stride. Sergeant Caban took another step into the causeway before turning back.
"What is?"
The sergeant's voice trailed away as the whole chamber lurched, spinning quickly on its axis, spilling the squad into the air. Dane felt himself go light, drifting away from the floor. The ceramite underfoot provided no purchase for the magno grips of his boots, and he floated away, the rest of the squad lifting up around him. Sergeant Caban slipped past him, propelled through the air by his last step, gently inverting as he slowly glided towards the wall behind Dane. The Raven Guard found themselves suspended about 3 meters above the floor, which had become a wall. Dane tried to twist towards the rungs of the ladder, whose purpose became clear. Angling his flamer, he fired a short burst, using it as a crude propellant to send him flying towards the ladder.
"What are you doing?"
demanded Caban. The sergeant came to a halt against the far wall, one hand outstretched to stop himself. Dane reached out with his left hand, flailing for the closest rung. His fingers closed around the metal. The crackling noise increased in pitch, becoming a pulsing whine. Dane looked around, trying to find the source. The ladder was thrumming with energy between his fingers. Realizing his error, he let go and tried to push himself away with his legs. Lightning arced from the ladder, coruscating across Dane's armor, earthing through exposed cabling around his midriff. The muscles in his abdomen tightened as electricity surged through the legionary, his spasm causing him to kick out. Hurling himself across the room, as sparks erupted from his armor and flames burst from melting seals and blown circuits. He could feel his flesh charring and cracking, the pain muted by a sudden rush of anesthetic compounds produced by his body. Dane's jaw felt as if it had been welded shut, while agony flared through his head. Spinning madly, he blacked out. His last vision, that of the room turning again, his companions plummeting towards the new floor.
"Incoming orders," said Dor, motioning with his bolter for Marco and Alfarius to move through the doorway ahead. "Distributing on squad channel."
Alfarius and Marco edged through the opening with their weapons ready. They found themselves on the edge of a large, vaulted chamber. 10 meters from them, the floor dropped away into a dark chasm, a natural fault in the strata of the mountain. With a thermal sight of his suit, Alfarius could see the telltale glint of power cables and weapons positions on the ceiling above, not yet activated.
"In 32 seconds, a bridge will descend to your position," came Korax's voice, relayed through Sergeant Dor's Vox unit. "You will have 43 seconds to cross that bridge."
"There are 7 weapons turrets, Marco reported. "Irregularly spaced. We only have clear lines of sight to 3 of them from this side. We will have to get out onto the bridge before we can see the others."
"No cover," added Alfarius. "We'll be targets on a shooting range." "Blind grenades," replied Korax. "They will disable the units for 20 seconds.
"Still not enough time, Lord," said Dor. "The gorge must be at least 250 meters wide.
"Sprint, Sergeant,"
came the Primarch's clipped response. Alfarius was about to protest, but held his tongue, as if the order had been given by his own Primarch. The others seemed willing to trust in Korax's judgment, and he could not afford to show any dissent.
"I'll go first," he said. "Marco, can you target that 2nd turret on the right?"
"From the edge of the chasm, yes," said Marco.
"Wait," snapped Dor, as Alfarius readied a blind grenade from his belt.
The Alpha Legionnaire froze in place. The sergeant took a few steps past the pair, looking around.
"Save it for when we reach the bridge," said Dor, lifting his bolter towards the darkness that hid the far side of the chamber. "We can take out these turrets before we cross."
A deep rumbling reverberated around the cathedral-like hall, sending dust shaking down from jagged stalactites that had grown up around the heavily riveted girders that held back the weight of the ceiling. From a recess far above, a metal structure descended into view, swaying on dozens of chains, each as wide as a legionary's shoulders.
"You have 43 seconds."
Korax's voice was calm, almost emotionless. Dor spat out a string of orders, and the squad burst into action. Alpharius headed towards the metal pillars that marked where the bridge would fall. The clump of his boots activated a sensor, and a turret directly above his head extruded from the metal of the ceiling. Luca fired his bolter, shredding the gun's casing in a storm of sparks. Alpharius carried on, trusting to his squad to protect him as he primed the blind grenade in his fist. The whine of the multi-melter filled his ears for a split second before another turret disintegrated into a mist of molten metal that rained down on the Alpha Legionnaire's armor. With a thunderous clang, the bridge hit the breaking pillars and rocked to a halt. Alpharius was already bounding along its length as it settled, his boots sending up flakes of rusting metal from the mesh of its floor.
35 seconds,
Dor warned them, his words almost lost in another blaze of bolter fire, this time from Velps. Another turret burst into flames. Alpharius ran across the bridge, blind grenade held ready, arms and legs pumping, his armor-assisted run covering 3 meters with every stride. He heard the clamor of the others following behind and tensed, waiting for the distinctive snap of a lasbolt.
"On the right, quadrant 3,
barked Dor. Alpharius did not look, but heard the sound of Velps behind him sliding to a halt. A red flash blazed from the gloom, melting through the bridge, just a meter behind him. Velps's bolter roared, and the defense turret was silenced.
"Grenade away!"
Alpharius bellowed, hurling the blind field detonator far ahead of him. The orb arced through the darkness, glinting ruddily as another turret opened fire, its blast scorching a line across Alpharius's vision as it bit into the bridge decking just in front of him. The machines controlling the turret had adapted and anticipated his run. Only the momentary pause to throw the grenade had saved Alpharius from a direct hit. He bent forwards into a full sprint as the blind grenade erupted into life at the far end of the bridge, forming a whirling cloud of silvery particles and swirling forks of electromagnetic energy. Again, the system controlling the defenses had evolved. The turrets were blinded, but whereas before they had ceased their fusillades, now they opened fire with a storm of bolts, flashing randomly around the chamber with a crisscross of ruby beams. As a beam seared past his right shoulder, Alpharius almost cursed in his native tongue, the words stopped by his gritted teeth as he plunged into the storm of the blind field. Clanking gears and hissing pistons sprang into life. The bridge lurched under Alpharius's feet, almost sending him toppling over the low rail. The blind cloud raged around him, blotting out all of the data being fed through his armor's auto-senses. In silence and blackness, Alpharius leapt, powering himself into the air. It seemed to take an age for the legionary to land, swallowed up by the blind field, oblivious to the crackling lasbolts that were undoubtedly flaring all around him. He landed with a heavy thud and almost lost his footing, coming down hard on one knee, the impact sending alarm signals through his suit. He surged to both feet and pressed on, trusting that the others were following him, trusting also that Korax was correct, and there was an archway or open door ahead to provide sanctuary. The blind cloud was already collapsing, the chaff and distortive energies fluttering into the darkness. Freed from the effects of the blind grenade, Alpharius's comms and auto-senses sprang into life again. Lasfire blazed around him, sending up wisps of molten rock from the floor. There was no point trying to dodge the haphazard fusillade, and he pressed on up the slightly sloping floor while his auto-senses shuddered. Patches of light swam across his eyes, and a dull ringing sounded in his ears as the suit systems recovered from the blind field.
"Iron left!"
Dor was shouting as he emerged from the spreading miasma of disruptive energy.
"High and left!"
Alpharius swung his bolter up to a firing position and saw through the infrared haze a flicker of the turret's artificial eye blinking in the darkness. He fired 3 rounds, puncturing the casing of the gun position, sending shards of metal through the air.
"Keep moving!"
Luca said, slapping a hand to Alpharius's shoulder as he ran past. Alpharius looked ahead and saw a blast door descending over a yellow-lit opening. The legionaries ducked under the closing portal in quick succession, armor clattering. Marco was the last in line, slightly slower due to the weight of his heavy weapon.
A red beam of laser energy spat down from the ceiling and shattered the armor of his right leg. Twisting, Marco tried to fall under the closing door, but fell short.
"Leave him!" Dor snapped.
Alpharius ignored the command and acted out of instinct, dropping his bolter to grab Marco's backpack with both hands. He hauled with all of his strength, dragging the stricken legionary under the door moments before it slammed closed with a resounding crunch. They were in a corridor, much like those they had first encountered in the maze, with drab-grey walls without markings. It curved away sharply to the right, the route ahead hidden after 10 meters.
"Sergeant Dor, report status."
Korax's voice was assured, confident that his warriors had succeeded. Dor looked at the squad, the lenses of his helm glinting in the bright light that came from a single strip in the roof.
"We're through, Lord Korax," he reported. "Marco is hurt, though. Can he move?"
The question hung in the air, while Marco pulled himself to his feet with Luca's aid. He hefted his multi-melter, checking the power cabling that linked it to his backpack.
"I'm not staying here,"
Marco said, voice strained,
"but don't expect me to do any more running."
"He can move," Dor passed on the legionary's assessment. "What are our orders?"
"Continue along the passageway for 30 meters.
"Understood. We are advancing," Dor replied.
At that moment, something came around the bend in the passageway, clanking and hissing. It was a strange mix of bipedal machine and small tank, with tracked feet of metal links, its main body shaped like a turret, with two multi-barreled cannons protruding menacingly from the front. Sensor disks and artificial eye lenses dotted a small module atop the machine. Alpharius watched as the barrels spun up to speed, momentarily taken aback by the machine's sudden appearance. Korax had warned of such a thing, but until now they had only encountered the fixed defenses. Even as he lifted his bolter to fire, he realized he had reacted too slowly. A weight smashed into the side of Alpharius, sending him reeling to his left just as the guard machine opened fire. Luca was firing his bolter as he took the brunt of the cannonade, fist-sized shells hammering into his armor in a welter of ceramite shrapnel and ripped metal. Luca was hurled backwards by the impact, his shattered armor slamming to the floor, cratered and cracked. Alpharius fired his bolter, targeting the sensor array, smashing lenses and aerials. The side of the machine exploded into a shower of molten drops from the blast of Marco's multi-melter, exposing steaming circuitry and wires. Dor's bolts slammed into the rent a second later as the turret spun towards Marco. Velps leapt forwards, with a melter charge in his fist. He ducked beneath the blaze of bullets as the Guardian opened fire again, smashing Dor from his feet. With a snarled oath, Velps slapped the charge on the casing beneath the guns and dived away. The machine detonated, its destruction filling the tunnel with incandescent fury that caused heat warnings to flare across Alpharius's helm display, an explosion far greater than that caused by the melter bomb alone. Shrapnel carved into Alpharius's chest and shoulder, but his armor held. The ceramite walls were similarly cracked and pitted with debris.
"Self-destruct!"
said Velps, the paint of his armor blistered away by the fiery blast. He fired several rounds into the smoking, twitching mechanical remains, snarling curses. Alpharius turned to where Luca lay awkwardly on the grey floor. The face of his helm was a mess, the Raven Guard symbol embossed on his breastplate mangled beyond recognition. Blood seeped from a dozen gouges in his armor.
"The sergeant looks alive," reported Marco, kneeling beside Dor's supine form.
The sergeant weakly held up his hand to confirm the fact.
"Lucar's dead,"
Alpharius said quietly. The Raven Guard had taken the full brunt of the attack, saving Alpharius's life. As he looked down at the blood-spattered, broken armor of Luca, Alpharius shook his head with disbelief.
"Why did he push me out of the way?"
"Why did you drag me to safety?"
Marco replied, pulling Dor to his feet. Alpharius had no answer. These warriors were Raven Guard, his enemies. His sole purpose was to ensure their destruction, but the mission required that they succeed in retrieving whatever it was that Korax sought in the vaults. That meant they had to stay alive to breach the inner sanctum of the mountain. Yet there was more to it than that. Their eventual deaths would be a necessity. But as individuals, Alpharius had respect, perhaps even friendship, for his fellow squad members.
Whether this was some remnant of memory from the warrior material in his amophagia, or something altogether more vexing and problematic, he did not like to guess.
"We are brothers in battle," Dor said quietly, crouching to place a hand on the shattered remnants of Luca's chest.
"Aye,"
said Velps, pressing his fist to his chest in salute.
"Battle, brothers."
"Battle, brothers," Alpharius whispered, pulling his gaze from the dead legionary, unable to deal with his confused thoughts.
Arcatus eyed the channel ahead with suspicion. The passageway was long and narrow, no more than 2 meters wide and at least 300 meters long, turning abruptly to the right to continue out of sight. About 50 meters away, a small gutter-like trench emerged from the wall, cutting diagonally across their line of advance. He called his custodians to a halt and waited for instruction from Korax. In the 3.5 hours since he had entered the labyrinth, Arcatus had found a new respect for the Primarch, and perhaps even a little trust. 4 times, Korax's last-minute warnings or orders had saved him and his group of custodians and Raven Guard from deadly traps and mechanical attack. Only a few minutes earlier, Arcatus had drawn back just in time to avoid a vaporous acid spray that would have melted through his armor in seconds. A rivulet of liquid ran along the channel, a dark green viscous fluid that flowed sluggishly, its level growing higher.
"I think this passage is going to be flooded, Korax," Arcatus reported.
"It is just lubricating fluid," the Primarch replied. "It is no threat. Proceed to the end of the passageway. There will be 3 doors. Take the door on the left. Beyond is some kind of energy grid. A laser trap, perhaps. Be wary."
This last comment seemed unnecessary. Arcatus had been wary from the moment he had first stepped into the deadly maze. He followed Korax's instructions, taking the squad to the bend in the corridor. A shouted warning caused him to turn as a previously invisible hatch opened in the ceiling. 3 silver orbs, each no bigger than his fist, dropped into view. The first exploded into molten shards as Custodian Ganius swept the blade of his guardian spear through it. The other 2 detonated of their own accord, showering Ganius and the Raven Guard next to him with jagged, smoking shrapnel. Wisps of vapor rose from their armor as the acidic compound melted swiftly through to flesh. Ganius cried out, the first time Arcatus had ever heard a custodian react to pain, and struggled to disconnect his breastplate. The Raven Guard legionary toppled to the floor with a crash. A hole melted through his helm, a slush of liquefied skull and brain matter dribbling onto the bare floor.
"It's through my ribs," snarled Ganius, dropping to 1 knee, clutching at his chest.
Arcatus acted without thought, to spare Ganius the inevitable agony of having his heart and lungs melted. His power halberd gleamed with energy as he swung the weapon, taking Ganius's head from his neck in 1 stroke. Ganius's decapitated corpse flopped to the ground, the echo of the impact resounding along the passageway.
"Move up! Door on the left!"
Arcatus snapped, waving his halberd to get the survivors advancing. He stood over the remains of Ganius, alert for any more of the silver globes. Arcatus followed after the last of the Raven Guard to pass, remembering the Primarch's promise that the vault contained something that would ensure Horus's defeat. With a last glance back to Ganius's body, which was collapsing in on itself as the acid chewed through his spine, Arcatus vowed to himself that he would hold Korax to his word.